Our reading this evening is 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verses 1 to 12. Now about the collection for God's people. Do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up, so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then, when I arrive, I will give letters of introduction to the men you approve and send them with your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable for me to go also, they will accompany me. After I go through Macedonia, I will come to you, for I will be going through Macedonia. Perhaps I will stay with you a while, or even spend the winter, so you can help me on my journey wherever I go. I do not want to see you now and make only a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. But I will stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost, because a great door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many who oppose me. If Timothy comes, see to it that he has nothing to fear while he is with you, for he is carrying on the work of the Lord, just as I am. No one then should refuse to accept him. Send him on his way in peace, so that he may return to me. I am expecting him along with the brothers. Now about our brother Apollos. I strongly urged him to go to you with the brothers. He was quite unwilling to go now, but he will go when he has the opportunity. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, we're nearly there in 1 Corinthians after 26 weeks, I think it is, 24 weeks. We're nearly there. A few verses at a time, working our way through this book. We've got this sermon tonight on the first half of 1 Corinthians 16, finishing off next week. And then after that, the following week, we've got a prayer meeting. Instead of a sermon at both the morning and the evening services, we're going to be praying instead. We're going to be using the stand that we've been doing as a model, and we're going to turn to prayer for the big God tent, which is the following week. And make sure you put in your diaries that on that weekend, there's no services here in church. All of the services are happening up on the clifftop. Both the Sunday morning and the Sunday evening services, combined services, we're being joined by Emmanuel and Cosmeston Christian Fellowship and possibly one or two other folk as well. And so we're fully anticipating having to take the sides off the tent and sit out on the grass as well. Hope the weather's as good as this for that. And then we'll do a short series then leading into the summer holidays. But here we are tonight in 1 Corinthians 16. And I'm so glad to be back tonight. You know, I've had a fantastic 2 weeks away. The weather has been just incredible. It's been very hard work, as you can imagine, in this heat. But I've had a fantastic time away with the army the last 2 weeks. We've done a number of exercises, and we had some really sadistic training put in by people, some very tough medical exercises. I can say that because the guy who set them is sat in the congregation tonight, made life miserable for us over the course of some of the exercises. But we had a wonderful time. The thing people keep asking me is, how are your feet? Because I know you got a message saying that I'd injured my feet. What had happened was that on the exercise, we'd got to the end of the day and we'd gone into the bivouac area, and I'd set up my little gas stove and put a mess tin on it and filled it with water to boil up to make a cup of tea. And having done that, I turned and I took my boots off, took my socks off and dried and powdered my feet, pulled the socks back on, and just as I was pulling my socks back on, I looked across and the water was boiling. So I said to the person who was with me, oh, the tea will be ready now in a second. And she reached forward and I turned sideways and it was tipped over onto my feet. And I had quite a nasty burn on the one foot, but the doctors came. It's a great thing about being in a field hospital. There's lots of doctors around. And so they came and they bandaged it up and they looked at it, lost a lot of skin, and then the next day we had quite a long sort of walk going on. But they took care of it, and it's healing up now. It's looking good. So thank you for your prayers for that. Not the highlight, as you can imagine, of the 2 weeks away. I've just had so much fun, but for me, as padre of the unit, the most exciting thing has been conversations I've had with individuals this year about Jesus and about faith. You know, I've been Padre there for 5 years now. And it's taken most of that 5 years for people to start trusting me, I think, enough to start having some of those conversations. And so people are coming and having conversations. And in particular, there were two nurses who I've been talking with over the whole 2 weeks, and was really privileged to be able to pray with them towards the end of the camp. And I got a text from one of them this morning saying, I'm going to church. I'm going to pick the other person up, and we're going to church this morning. They've gone to a church over in Cardiff. Really exciting to be able to sit with people who were a long way away from Jesus and just to see them slowly coming to a knowledge that there's a God who loves them. They were very different people, these two nurses. The first one had been brought up in a church, in a very strict church, in a very traditional church. And when she'd gone off to university, had started living the student life. Had started drinking much more heavily and had got a number of boyfriends and living the student life to its full. And because of her upbringing, came under condemnation. And it got to a point where she was saying, you know, God could have nothing to do with me. I've been taught by the church what sort of people Christians ought to be. I've been taught right through my childhood and through my teenage years how I ought to behave if I'm going to be a Christian. And I've not lived like that for the last few years. God would want nothing to do with me. And so the conversations with her were all about grace and mercy and how it's not about us earning God's forgiveness and love. He loves us whatever we're like. And the whole point is that Jesus loves us not because we do the right thing, but because he loves us. He created us and he built us a relationship and he loves us. And so those conversations were all about grace. The other person was the exact opposite. She had no church background at all. She had never been taken to church as a child. She didn't really know much. And so she needed to come to first of all believe in God and then start hearing about Jesus. But she had much the same kind of going on in her head. I'm not good enough for God. This God that you're talking about, this Jesus that you're telling about, he would want nothing to do with me. And it just struck me talking to those two people and to one or two others as well over the 2 weeks, how damaged people get by church. That actually the things that were putting those folk off coming to Christ and becoming Christians and committing themselves to Christ and going to church was an understanding of what the church might be like if they went along. We're not good enough. Surely God would want nothing to do with people like us. Surely the church wouldn't have a place for us amongst their number. Are you really telling me that there are churches around where folk like me can fit in? And I'm able to say to them, yeah, trust me, they accepted me. And if they took me, they're going to take you. Because I'm the chief of sinners. I'm not the holiest padre in the world. And sometimes the guys like to have a bit of a laugh and say, you're not like the other padres who are always holding services and praying. You like being out in the field and getting dirty and playing about doing the soldiering stuff. And I'm able to say, yeah. But the reason I'm here is because I've got good news. That God loved someone, even like me, a sinner, who needed grace. And it just really set me thinking about what our churches look like to people outside. What are the characteristics of our churches? When we talk to people who aren't church members, when we talk to people who haven't become Christians, when we talk to folk in the street and our neighbours and our friends, and over this next couple of weeks as we start really in earnest inviting people along to the big God tent and to the mission and to the stuff that's going to follow through into the autumn and up to Christmas, what is it that they think we are like? We know what we're like, and we think we know what sort of character we are and what sort of people we are. But I wonder what actually people outside the church look at us and see. What is it they think when they think about church? I think it's an appalling sadness. An appalling sadness. that for many people, when they look at church, they think of guilt, they think of condemnation, they think of killjoys, they think of mean-spirited people. They see the churches arguing over what they consider fine points of doctrine. They see the church getting into all sorts of twists about women's ministry and homosexuality and alcohol and all sorts of things where the world seems to have moved so far, and they just don't understand what the church is doing over there, looking at its navel and arguing about itself. I'm not saying those things aren't important. I'm just saying, what about people who are outside when they look in? What do they think about those things? And they see about paedophile priests and the church talking about the persecution of priests being like worse than it was in the communist era. I don't know if you saw that report that the Vatican has condemned the newspapers for their reporting of paedophile priests and saying it's worse than the persecution we had under the communists. What does the world outside think of the church when it looks in and sees what we're doing and what's going on? What are the key words that they think about? And for me, one of the wonderful things about this book of 1 Corinthians is that it's not dealing with a perfect church. Paul didn't write to a church that had got it all sorted out. This isn't a church that's made up of the most incredible bunch of saints who ever walked the earth. And Paul's not writing to say, wow, you're doing so well. This is a church of sinners. This is a church of people who have become Christians, who've come to Christ and are still getting it wrong. And as we've gone through the last few months looking at this letter, we've seen all sorts of things about lawsuits and sexual immorality and marriage and immorality in marriage and the way that they've been treating apostles and not treating them right. And what else have we had? Divisions in the church. The food sacrifice to idols, not getting that right. Warnings from Israel's history. I'm just going through some of the headings of the NIV. Idol feasts and the Lord's Supper. Problems with worship. I have no praise for you in this matter, he says, about the way they come to communion. Spiritual gifts and the need for love in the centre. And Paul's been writing to this church that's not getting it right. And for me, you get some key ideas about what church ought to be about. That it's not about fine points of doctrine and which Bible we read and what our worship is about. It's about huge, big themes of grace and love and mercy and peace and joy. And that's the thing that keeps coming up for me through this book and through so many of Paul's letters, of look at the big themes. Look at what church ought to be about. Not the little narrow issues that exclude people and make them feel condemned and appear to be joyless. But look at the big themes. And in this last chapter now, as we come towards the end of 1 Corinthians, where Paul's starting to talk about personal requests, he's still wanting to say the same things to the church. He's saying, now, ladies, you treat me, I want you to deal with what's going on in my life the same way as I'm saying you should live your life. And if there was a little phrase, a catchphrase, a slogan to sum up these last few verses, it would be this: be generous. Be generous. Don't be known as Christians as mean-spirited, nasty, bigoted, narrow-minded people. Be known for being people of generosity. Be known for being people with big hearts and wide arms. I was talking this morning about who do we take the gospel to, and I was saying, I want our doors to be as wide as possible so as many folk, as many different folk from as many different backgrounds as possible can get in. So I don't want a narrow door with a sign on it saying you can come in if you like this. I want this church to have a big door saying, all welcome. The saints and the righteous and the holy and the churchgoers, but also the drinkers and the drug dependents and the single parents and the homeless and anybody. Because that's what Jesus, I believe, would have said. And if we're heading for this passage, I've chosen, be generous. When folks say, what is your church like? I'd love them to use words like grace and peace and love and joy. And one word I just love, generosity. I'd love to be known as a generous church, a generous spirit, a generous attitude, a generous hand, a generous heart. And Paul, writing now to the church at Corinth, starts off by saying, be generous with your money. The first thing I want you to be generous with is with your money. John James used to talk about the two conversions that went on. You know, the conversion of the heart and the conversion of the wallet. That, you know, you're not fully converted until your wallet's converted as well. And Paul is saying, is your wallet, is your purse, is your pocketbook, is your bank account converted too? Now, about the collection for God's people, do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then when I arrive, I'll give you letters of introduction to the men you approve and send them with your gifts to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable for me to go also, then I will accompany them. He's saying, I'm going to come and visit you. And you know there's a need in the church in Jerusalem. You'll know the background to this. There's been a series of bad harvests and famine and trouble for the church back in Jerusalem. And the churches over in Europe and up in Asia, which were doing okay, Paul had urged them to have a collection to give to the saints who were struggling. And Paul's saying here to the church at Corinth, now you do the same. I told those churches over in Galatia to do this. Now I want you to do the same. Have a collection. On the first day of each week, set aside some money. Why is the first day important? Because it means God gets into your bank account first. God gets to it first. If you're like me, if you were to give on the last day of the week, there may not be much left some weeks. And Paul says on the first day of the week, before you do anything else, before you start spending it on yourself, before you start spending it on your family and your food and your clothes and your house and your car and all that, on the first day of the week, set aside some money. So that when the collection comes around, the money's already set aside. It's already there. What's this implication for us here in this church? Well, it means that actually the collection for the church and the work of the church won't happen next Sunday. It should happen in the morning, on the first day of the working week. Set aside a portion of your income ready for God. It's an act of worship. It's an act of joy. It's an act of generosity. And he says, be generous. Set aside on that first day of the week some money. Where, well, how much? Well, in keeping with your income. If you're rich, then set aside a bit more. If you're struggling, then don't feel bad. You set aside what you can in keeping with your income. But the point is this, set something aside first. If giving, and we talk about this often, if giving is an act of worship, if it's an act from the heart that reflects our thankfulness and our joy for what God has given us, then what does it say when we give him what's left over? Well, I ate all week and I had my journeys backward forwards to work and I needed a new pair of shoes. And well, Saturday night I went out and we had a meal and it got to Sunday and, oh, yeah, God, you can have the rest. You can have what's left over. It's not terribly generous. And it's not terribly worshipful. No, first he says, at the beginning of the week, set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income. And there's something else I want you to notice about this. This isn't for the local church. My guess is there's separate collections for the upkeep and the work of the local church and for the widows and the orphans in the local church. This is to give away. This is generosity. This is just money just to get rid of. You know, last year our gift day was for the 434 fund. And we took in all that money. And we collected in that large amount of money. Why? So we could give it away. Not to spend on ourselves, not to improve the building, not to make our worship better, not to provide for ourselves, just to give it away when people had need. And Paul's saying, you know, this is what this is for. It's just give it away. Take the collection up so you can give it away. And what's more is, you're going to give it away to foreigners who are different from you a long way away. This is money to go to the Jerusalem church. Now just think for a moment. Think back into what you know about the scriptures, about the church in Jerusalem and the church in Europe. The church in Jerusalem is Jewish. It's in Jerusalem, it's the home church, but it's Jewish. The church in Corinth is a Gentile church. They're Europeans, they're Greeks and Romans. And there'd been this big row, hadn't there, at the beginning of the church, between the Jewish church and the Gentile church. Should the Gentiles be made like Jews? Should they have to go through the ceremonies? Should they have to keep the observances and the rituals? And there was a group of folk going around stirring up the churches, saying, if you want to be proper Christians, then you've got to become like those Jews back in Jerusalem. You've got to become like those Christians who are Jewish. And Paul is saying, I want you to take a collection. And I want you to be generous so we can give the money away to those people who aren't like you. To those folk who are a bit different. To those folk who are a long way away. Why? Just do it to be generous. You know, sometimes it's easy to have a collection for ourselves. It's easy to have a collection for something we want to do. It's easy to say we're sending somebody somewhere, or we've got a project, or we've got a need, and have a collection and the money will come in. But it takes something else to say we're going to take a collection and just give it away. And you know what? We're going to give it away to those people who are maybe a bit critical of us and didn't think of us as proper Christians. We're just going to give it away. And the start of this, for me, this little passage here, one of the things we can say about it is Paul saying, be generous. Have a generous heart. Have a wide heart. Stand in solidarity with those who maybe you wouldn't normally associate with and think of yourself as a little bit different to them. But be generous with your money. This is also, I think, the first hint of moving away from the Sabbath to moving to the Sunday. Of course, the Sabbath would have been the Saturday, and I was reading a comment today saying this was the first hint of the early church moving to a Sunday, and it's saying on the first day of the week, take up your collection. And so maybe we're seeing something else going on here that's different in the Gentile church, in the Greek church as well. But he's saying, be generous with money. But then secondly, be generous with your homes. Don't be just generous with your pocketbook, be generous with your homes as well. Be hospitable. After I go through Macedonia, I'll come to you, for I'll be going through Macedonia. Perhaps I'll stay with you for a while, or even spend the winter, so you can help me on my journey wherever I go. I don't want to see you now and make just a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. But I'll stay on in Ephesus until Pentecost, because a great door has opened for me for an effective work. And there are many who oppose me. And then if Timothy comes, look after him as well. Here's Paul, he's writing ahead, and he's saying, I'm going to come and stay with you for a little while. Get the guest room ready. Make up the spare bed. Oh, but don't worry, I'm not just coming for a weekend. When I come, I'm really coming. You know what? Have you ever had guests, and they've arrived on the Friday, and you're really glad to see them, and you sit around, and you chat, and you catch up on the Friday night? And then you spend all day Saturday together, and you maybe go out and do something, and you show them around the local sites, and then you'll have dinner together Saturday, and you'll sit Saturday night and chat a bit more. And by the time it gets to Sunday morning, you don't want to say it, but that question is on your mind. So what time are you leaving? When were you thinking of going? And then they say, well, I thought I might stay another day. I thought I might stay a little while longer. Well, Paul said, you know, when I come, I don't want to just come for a flying visit. I don't want to just be there a few days. When I come, I really plan on staying. I want to make my visit worthwhile when I turn up. You know, don't expect me to come on a Friday and be gone by the Monday. When I come, I want to be amongst you for a while. And there's just an assumption. There's just an assumption that they'll take him in. Why? Because it was a hallmark of the ancient church, to be hospitable. It was a hallmark of the ancient world that when folk arrived, you made them welcome. You opened up your home. And one of the hallmarks, I think, of this church, that's something that the church ought to be known for, is its generosity in hospitality. That folk arrive and feel welcome. You know, we spend a lot of energy and a lot of time and a lot of effort over the last couple of years emphasising welcome, because it's really important that when folk come through the door, that they feel they can sit and stay a while and they're welcome. That there's no pressure to move on. And the hallmark of a God-centred, Christ-centred, Spirit-filled church is that it's hospitable, that it's welcoming, that people can come in and feel at home. And Paul just has this assumption: you Christians, when I arrive, I expect to be able to stay a while. I will come and stay with you. Perhaps I'll even spend the winter. Going back about, 25 years or so ago, there was a student in our church who was very unexpectedly put out of their student digs. And they had nowhere to go, and they'd come into church on the Sunday night. They'd been given the news on the Friday that they were having to move out the Monday. And at the time I was newly married, been married about 3 weeks, and we'd come back from honeymoon. I'd just started back at work, and it was the Sunday night, and this young woman came into church incredibly upset. Really, really upset that she was having to leave her digs. And we said, come and stay with us. We've got a spare room. Come and stay with us. And a couple of the older Christians said, you're newlyweds. You sure you know what you're doing? You sure you want to take someone into your home at this point? And we said, yeah, of course. You know, it'll only be for a few days. Well, 9 months later, I started to understand what some of the older folk in the church had said. I'm still glad we did it. It turned out later on that it was Angus Douglas's cousin. that when we came to this church, we found out that they were related, and we've met them a few times since, the people. But that's what Paul's saying. He said, I'm not just coming for a few days. I want to come and spend the winter with you. How generous was that church that the travelling apostles just knew that there was a place for them to go if they were going to work there? Do people feel from our streets that if they walk through the door, there'd be the same kind of generosity of spirit that says, you know what, you're welcome. Whatever baggage you bring in with you, whatever you're bringing in your emotional suitcases, whatever you're bringing in terms of needs, welcome. Whatever sort of person you are, whatever your background, wherever you come from, we want to say, welcome. Whether you're like us or not like us, whether you do things the way we do them or not, we want to say, come on in, have a seat, settle down for a while, spend some time with us. One of the hallmarks of this early church was the generosity in terms of hospitality. And then thirdly, be generous to people. Have a generous heart towards folk. Be gracious. He starts to write about Timothy. If Timothy comes, see to it that he has nothing to fear while he is with you, for he is carrying on the work of the Lord. Why does Paul write that? Have you ever noticed this interesting little turn of phrase? When Timothy comes to see you, make sure he has nothing to fear. Why is Paul writing that? My guess is because Timothy might have had something to fear. Maybe he'd heard rumour. Oh, that church over there doesn't like you very much, Timothy. That church over there doesn't want to accept your ministry. That church over there thinks you're too young to be in ministry. That church over there has heard a bit about your teaching and they don't want you there. I don't know what it is that's gone on exactly. We sort of can glean some hints from other parts of the scriptures and from the stuff that Paul writes to Timothy. But for some reason, Paul had a suspicion that Timothy might feel uncomfortable when he came to Corinth. And Paul writes ahead and he writes to the church and says, when Timothy arrives, make sure that he's got nothing to fear. Don't say anything to him about whatever it is, your reservation. When he comes, make him welcome. Be gracious. Let him in and be generous towards him. He says, why? Why? Because he's working for the Lord, just as I am. No one then should refuse to accept him. There's another one of those little hints. Maybe there's some in the church who are saying, we do not acknowledge his ministry. We don't think he's called. We don't think he's the right person. We don't think he's the right age. There's a hint of that in other places. And Paul's saying, don't do that. Be gracious. When he stands in front of you and teaches, even if in your heart you're thinking, not sure about this, you don't let him know that. You make him welcome. You're generous to him. You're hospitable. You're wide of heart. In the last year, you know, we've had guest preachers, a guest preacher in this church who stood on this platform, and all the way through I was thinking, I can't accept this teaching. I don't know why we invited this guy. He will not have known that. And what Paul is saying, when Timothy comes amongst you, make sure that he feels loved and welcomed and at home. Be generous in grace towards Timothy. He's only doing God's job. Accept him and welcome him. There was a saying in this church when I first arrived, which was, it went something like this, and I can't remember you'll be able to correct me, those of you who've been here a bit longer, but it was, when you say something to people, when you want to say something critical, make sure that it's true, kind, and necessary. Is what you're about to say true? You know, don't confront people over something which isn't true. And then, is it kind to say it? Don't say something to people if it's not kind, if it's not for their benefit and out of love. And then don't say it if it's necessary. I think that's fantastic. You know, so one of the things that we hear often in Christian circles is, you know, oh, that person has offended me and I need to go and tell them in love. No, you don't. You really don't. You can just shut up and be gracious and take it on board and say, you know what, I was hurt by that, but God bless them anyway. You don't have to say anything. And my guess is that Paul is saying a little bit about that. You know, one of the hallmarks of your church is that you should be generous in spirit and gracious towards people. As Paul starts to wind down this letter, having, you know, had to deal with some huge, huge, huge issues all the way through the book, where does he finish up? Well, he finishes up really in places he touched right through the letter. Love. Love one another. Love the church in Jerusalem. Love me. Love Timothy. Love Apollos. Be generous. Open your doors. Open your hearts. Open your wallets. Be known as a people of grace and peace. We had some visitors here this morning. Those of you who weren't here this morning won't have known this, but we had a church that was on a church weekend at Hebron Hall came, and they all sat together, and it was absolutely fantastic. They came in, and they just really added to the worship. It was a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time, and it was great to be able to accept to have them here and welcome them here this morning. And afterwards, we were having a conversation. I was having a conversation with some of the people, and I said, what was the key thing that you got this morning? What was it that you liked about being here? And they said, you know what? The worship was fine, and the preaching was okay, and the coffee was good, and the cakes were nice, but we were just made so welcome. We were made welcome here. We felt at home. When we go and knock on doors over the coming weeks and months, and as we invite people to events, and as folk hopefully come in over the big God tent weekend into the tent, and I wanted to go out, if nothing else, saying, you know what? I didn't agree with everything they said. I didn't particularly like the way that they sang their songs, and I'm not so sure about the preacher having jeans on and not having a suit on. But you know what? I felt welcome. I felt as if I belonged. I felt as if they wanted me there. They're people who are generous. That they did that for me. If nothing else, if we can do that, then I believe we're starting to follow Christ more closely. It's being known as a church that's generous and wide and not narrow, but wants to give good news to all. Amen. Let's close our time together by saying the words of the grace. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with us all evermore. Amen.